This is Pastor Bill bringing you a News in Focus. This one is found on the PressHerald.com, and it was dated April 4th, and it's called Transgender Mormons Finding Acceptance, Syracuse, Utah, written by Peggy Stack of the Associated Press. 16-year-old Grayson Moore had no label, only metaphors to describe the disconnect he felt his body and soul. It was like car sickness, he said, when your eyes and inner ears disagree about whether you're moving. It makes you sick, he said. According to the Salt Lake Tribune, that's the same with gender. When Moore's mother gave her then-daughter a vocabulary for the feeling, gender dysphoria, or transgender, there followed an immediate sense of relief and recognition. And he said, God confirmed that he was not just a tomboy, he was in the wrong body. Such moments come in the life of all transgender persons, times when vague feelings of general discomfort with their identity crystallize into that realization. All right, since the article right here takes a little break in the section, I want to take a little break and say it's interesting that God confirmed to this tomboy that the then girl was not just a tomboy, she was in the wrong body. Let's understand that for a Mormon to say that, that is even more spicy than for anyone else really to say it. For you see, you existed on another planet in a spirit form before you came to this earth. And to say that God put you in the wrong body is quite the indictment. And then to say that God confirmed with you that you were in the wrong body is amazing. Remember, this is a religion that teaches that God put you in a body, and you already existed, and he assigned you a body. And, oh, he put this person in the wrong body, and he even owned up to it, says Grayson. This section is called Link Between Body and Spirit. Mormonism, with its emphasis on the physical link between bodies and spirits and its insistence that gender is eternal, initially made it tougher to acknowledge what was happening inside of them. Since switching genders, all three said that they have found, now we're talking about three case studies here, people who say that they are transgender. All three said that they found psychological and theological peace, even divine approval, and a surprising welcome from their local Latter-day Saint leaders and congregations. Now, you understand, of course, we can't prove that. I could sit here and bash LDS for approving of it, but this is just their saying that. It's no different than someone saying, hey, I'm a member of Berean, and they might come here once every 2 or 3 months and not actually be members. No one's going to really, necessarily, come and check and make sure they're a member. Hopefully they would, but so I'm going to be real careful here about using this as leverage to slam the LDS Church, because they may not actually be recognized as members. But in any case, they feel at peace to say not only did God give them approval of this transgenderism, but that their LDS leaders did too. They are among a growing but little understood minority in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Transgender Mormons in Utah have formed a support group, march in gay pride parades, though most are not gay, and talk openly about their experiences. A weekly, quote, family home evening, unquote, group routinely draws about 30 participants along the Wasatch Front. Efforts to bring awareness are crucial, they believe, because most members of the Utah-based faith know little or nothing about what it's like to be transgender, and many judge and reject transgender loved ones. Now, I love the way they use these words, judge. If by judge you mean they decide it's wrong, then yeah, probably. And probably every person who's not for homosexuality or transgenderism is judging. But then again, when I decide that I am wearing mismatched socks, I'm making a judgment. So it's impossible to go through life without making judgments. And sometimes you have to decide if something's right or wrong. I promise you, even homosexuals judge. They decide whether something is right or wrong. For example, they judge that my judging of them being wrong is wrong. But they don't mind judging that. But they judge it to be wrong, you see. Very interesting, self-defeating argument. Still, the faith does have policies in place saying elective sex reassignment surgery, quote, may be cause for formal church discipline, unquote, according to the church's handbook. An official LDS document, The Family, A Proclamation of the World, written and approved by the faith's top leader, states that gender is an essential characteristic of individual, premortal, mortal, and eternal identity and purpose. So in other words, the official LDS document seems to be saying that you were either male or female on that other planet. And so it doesn't work well to say that you're in the wrong body here, because you were only assigned the gender, you're only assigned a body whose gender corresponded to your premortal gender. Because of this, church spokesman Eric Hawkins writes in an emailed statement, "The church does not baptize those who are planning transsexual operations. If a person has already had such an operation and wishes to join the church, they may be baptized only after an interview with the mission president and approval by the first presidency." And by the way, that's pretty high, the first presidency. That's pretty high. That's Salt Lake City high, I'm pretty sure. The church does not ordain transgender people to the priesthood. Males age 12 may be in the Aaronic priesthood, and males age 18 may be in the Melchizedek priesthood. So it does not allow transgender people to be in the priesthood or issue temple recommends to them. After being a year as a law-abiding, good Mormon adult, you can have a temple recommend. Okay, that's just means you can go to the temple and you can do certain things like be baptized for dead relatives. Hawkins adds, church leaders counsel already baptized members against elective transsexual operations, and bishops may refer specific cases to the stake president for the possible resolution. So you have branches and stakes. Okay, wards and stakes. Bishops are in charge of wards, and two or more wards would be in a stake, and a stake has a presidency for possible resolution at the level or by the first presidency, which I think, again, is Salt Lake City. The role of God. We have faith that ultimately the emotional pain that many of these people feel will be addressed by a loving God who understands each individual's circumstances and heart. Many active LDS transgender persons accept the church's statements about gender being an essential characteristic and are willing to live with some restrictions. Still, despite how comfortable transgender Mormons are in their new skin, the LDS Church is a very gendered place. Men go to priesthood meetings. Women to relief society. Men officiate at rituals and general meetings. Women lead auxiliaries. Men sit on one side of the temple, and women generally on the other, and that complicates their lives inside the faith. That is the transgender folks. Growing up in Davis County, or Mormonopolis as Moore calls it, the young Latter-day Saint girl named Grace had severe panic attacks beginning in late elementary school and continuing through junior high. By high school, says the 22-year-old math major at University of Utah, his distress was so extreme he hardly could function. So a girl, and now he is 22 years old and male, he says. Moore's mother, Neka Allgood, took him to various doctors, but no one could diagnose his problems. Trained as a molecular biologist and a scientist by instinct, Allgood had suspicion that her daughter might have gender dysphoria. In other words, a disconnect. Kind of like when your ears and eyes disagree as to whether or not you're moving. When Allgood asked Moore if he was a girl in the body but a boy in his brain, the young man simply said, "It's not just my brain. In my soul, I'm a boy." That night, Grace Moore knelt in prayer asking God, "Am I your son?" He said he got a powerful spiritual affirmation that he was indeed a boy and that it was going to be okay. His mother essentially received the same message. "The answer to my prayers was to love him, to help him live as a boy." Well, where do we get the grounds to believe that God shows up to us and tells us, "I really did get it wrong. You are a different gender"? Because that is essentially what these Mormons are saying. You were male, premortal. I put you in a female body accidentally, and you're really a male. Or you were a female, premortal, and I put you in a female body, mortal, but you're really a male. See, either way, you're indicting God. And then to bring him in on the fact that he approved of it, well, where do they get the grounds for this? I'm glad you asked. It turns out that from the Encyclopedia of Mormonism on byu.edu, you can get a full illustration, and I will put it on the sermon audio description. Now, here's just an idea of what they're used to. The prophet Joseph Smith had his first vision in 1820. He saw God the Father and God the Son, and they expressed their displeasure at the existing visions. And that was 1820. Well, in 1823, he saw the vision of the glorified Moroni, who is the son of Mormon, and he told him about plates that would be revealed to him. The next day, Joseph went to a hill and he found the plates. And in 1824, 1827, he returned to the hill each year as specified. He met the angel and received final instructions regarding the record. And so he found, he had another vision in 1827. And then he had a fourth vision, it seems, or at least a third vision of John the Baptist in 1829. Joseph Smith and Oliver Cowdery became concerned about baptism for the remission of sins, and they went into the woods to pray, and both record that a messenger from heaven, John the Baptist, laid hands on them and ordained them to the Aaronic priesthood. And as at that point that they baptized each other, Peter, James, and John. John the Baptist also informed Joseph and Oliver had the power of laying on of the hands, and that they should refer, that they would appear to him thereafter. And so in 1829, Peter, James, and John show up. As a matter of fact, the priesthood is everlasting. The Savior, Moses, Elias, gave the keys to Peter, James, and John on the mount when they were transfigured before them. So on the Mount of Transfiguration, Jesus, Moses, and Elijah, gave the keys of the priesthood to Peter, James, and John, and they came and appeared to them. So get this now. All right, so that is four visions now. We have God the Father, God the Son, 1820, you have the Moroni, 1823, John the Baptist in 1829, and in 1829 as well, later that, 1 month later actually, Peter, James, and John show up somewhere, it says, between Harmony and Colesville on the Susquehanna River. And then you have in 1829, the latter part of June 1829, three men went into the woods adjacent to the Whitmer home in Fayette, New York, and knelt in prayer. And who appeared to them? They saw angel and plates that we know that we have been translated by the gift and power of God, for his voice has declared it unto us. They saw angels, it says, in later 1829. And then in 1831, while preparing for the text of his translation of the Bible, Joseph Smith with Sidney Rigdon moved to John Johnson's home in Hiram, Ohio. As the two men worked on the Gospel of John, it became apparent to them that many important points concerning salvation of individuals had been lost from the Bible. Joseph Smith wrote, "It appeared self-evident from what truths were left that if God rewarded everyone according to the deeds done in the body, the term heaven as intended for the saints' eternal home must include more kingdoms than one." And in 1832, in an upper room, while he and Sidney Rigdon were examining the passage, they saw a multifaceted vision, commencing with the vision of the Father and Son in the highest glory. The scene was followed by a series of visions, including the perdition and the sons of perdition, and when the celestial, terrestrial, and telestial kingdoms of glory. And so that is, let's see here, that is number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And then number 7, the Kirtland Temple visions, and this is just to get us started. In 1836, when the temple was dedicated, Joseph Smith, Oliver Cowdery, and a few others saw many heavenly personalities, to include Moses and one that they call Elias. Well, that is just the first 7, and you can find all of these on this very same BYU webpage. So when we say that Joseph Smith saw many visions, and God was telling him things. Now get this now. God was telling him things like, the Gospel of John is incorrect. That is what I read to you. And this is on their page. Well, if God is showing up and telling you the Bible that you had is wrong, well, then why wouldn't your followers say things like, God showed up to me and told me it was okay, that I, a woman, am really a man? See how this works, folks. If the foundations be destroyed, what can the righteous do? Psalm 11:3. I just wanted you to be aware that there is a connect, or a disconnect rather, between the slippery slopes of today's Mormons and the founding of the religion itself. This is Pastor Bill. Thanks for listening.